Thank you all for coming today to my presentation. I'm going to present some work that I did as a master's thesis at University of Arkansas. The name of my presentation is Phenotypic and Market Assisted Selection for Soybean Genotypes with Food Grade Seed Traits. Soybean is mainly produced for oil and protein. Oil is derived in edible fats and more recently into biodiesel. After the beans are crushed, whatever is left over is called the soybean meal, which is incorporated in animal feed for poultry and swine. The small percentage of the soybeans are used for the production of soy foods. And when we talk about soy foods, we have two different major markets. The first one, the one that includes soy foods, are made from large city lines, that's tofu, soy milk, edamame, and roasted soybeans. And also we have the market from small seeded lines, natto and soybean sprouts. Soy food sales have been increasing during the last 15 years at a rate of 20 to 25% per year. And it's being forecasted that the sales are going to reach $55 billion by 2015. There are some specific traits that are desired in soybeans that are going to be used for the production of soy foods. The first one that we have here is high protein, which increases tofu quality. Then we have large seeds, which correlated with tofu yield, and also, of course, for edamame, which is a vegetable soybean. High sucrose increases the sweetness of the soy foods, and low stachys improve the digestibility of soy foods. The appearance is also important, as we have here, the yellow and buff phylum are desired in beans that are going to be used for soy food production. So there's still a need to develop cultivars for this specific market. Therefore, the objectives of our work was identify genotypes with high protein, high sucrose, and large seed size for edamame, tofu, and soy milk. Also, we wanted to identify molecular markers linked to seed protein and sucrose. For that, we developed mapping population derived from the cross between R95-1705 and MSL552. R95-1705 is a high-protein germplasm line released in 2007 from the University of Arkansas. It's a mature group 5. It's got a high protein, about 46%. The seed size of this line is approximately 15.5 grams per 100 seeds, and it has buff phylum. The other line was developed by Virginia Tech University. It's a mature group 5. It's got moderately high sucrose, approximately 4.8 sucrose. And the seed size of this line is 22 grams per 100 seeds. And the phylum color is yellow. We used 98 recombinant immune lines that were developed by single seed descent from the F2s. And then we performed field experiments in 2007 and 2008. The locations that we chose for those experiments were Fayetteville, Arkansas, that's northwest Arkansas, and Stuttgart, which is eastern Arkansas. In 2007, we used one rep. And then in 2008, we used two reps, and we used 10-foot rows with 10 seeds per foot. Once we had the beans, once we harvested them, we phenotyped them. For seed size, we weighed 100 seeds. For protein, we took a small sample of 25 grams, and we sent that to a USDA lab at Peoria, Illinois. And for sugar, we used high-performance liquid chromatography on extracts derived from soybean powder, ground soybeans. For the genotyping, we used 81 polymorphic SSR markers that were distributed on all 20 linked groups of the soybean genome. And then we performed polyfilament electrophoresis. As you can see there, we're looking for those differences between the two alleles, R95-1705 and MSL552. Once we had the data, we performed single mark analysis in which we grouped the lines according to the genotype, and then we determine whether they show significant differences for each trait. If they show significant difference for the trait, we declare that that marker was possibly linked to a QTL for sucrose or protein or seed size, whatever trait we measure. Moving on to results, here we have the phenotypic distributions of the traits. For the record, this is 2-year data and 2 locations, still average, just so you know. And we have seed size, protein, and sucrose. The pattern that we see here is they all show a continuous distribution and fit a normal distribution. And also what we notice here that the parents of these populations fell within the range expected. For seed size, for example, we have 22 grams for MF-alpha-2, was what we were expecting. In protein, we have 46% for R95-1705. And for sucrose, MF-alpha-2 was also high sucrose. The other two traits, the other two sugars, showed a similar pattern in terms of being continuous and fitting a normal distribution. The only difference was that most of the population in raffinose was above the high raffinose variant. That was the only difference that we found if we compare all the traits. In the ANOVA, we include ear location and the interaction between ear and location. And I wanted to add something here on the table. The percentage of the phenotypic variance that was explained by the differences between genotypes, because we can include genotype in the ANOVA. So what we notice here, what we found, is that protein and sucrose didn't show any interaction between ear and location. And a large percentage of the variance was explained by the genotypic factor. Stachys was somehow in between being stable and sensitive to the environment, but if you look at raffinose there, let me see, only small percentage of the phenotypic variance was explained by the difference among genotypes. Again, we say that protein and sucrose were pretty consistent across years and environments. Here's the table with the means and standard deviations for each location in each year. And this is a table that supports my previous point on being these traits being consistent. We see that protein goes from 44.8 to 44.1, and then 44.4 and 43.7. Similarly, sucrose goes only from 3.8, 3.9, 4.0, 3.9. They all fall within a very small range of protein and sucrose percentages. The marker analysis showed that markers SATT614 and SATT496, both on leakage goodbye, were significant for protein and sucrose for both traits, and they were environmentally stable. When I say environmentally stable, I'm referring to the fact that they were significant for each location, each year, and also with the average data. As you can see here in this picture, they were close to each other in the very small section of linkage goodbye. The allelic effects of these two markers were similar. Here we have a table where we compare those lines having the allele for R95-1705 versus lines having the MF-alpha-2 allele. We see that when we look at SATT614, we obtain a difference of 2.4% increasing protein. For the other marker, SATT496, it's a 2.1% difference in protein. And when we look at both at the same time, we obtain a difference of 2.5%. Sucrose was a different story. It was an opposite effect of these markers. As you can see, it's a 0.5 difference when you compare both groups. So this supports the negative correlation between these two traits that have been observed previously. We also had a confirmation population. This was done by a co-worker, Dr. Andrew Scavu at the University of Arkansas. He crossed R95-1705 with a Virginia line 99 BPI-120, 82 recombinant in lines that were run same years and same locations. And he found that SATG614 was also significant in this population for protein. And another marker at the same linkage group, as you can see there in the picture, was significant for protein. All these three markers in the very small section of this chromosome. So these tell us that that particular chromosome region is controlling the protein percentage and also affecting the sucrose and soybean seeds. We also decided to make some phenotypic selections to include some lines in our future research, yield trials, or crossing block. And we used two criteria for that. We wanted to select lines that were about 20 grams per 100 seeds, and also at the same time protein about 45%. We ended up with four lines that met those requirements. And when we moved to the other criterion, seed size 20 grams and sucrose about 4.5%, we only had one. Just for the record, the lines that had a high protein and had all had the R95-1705 allele, and those lines that had above 4.5% sucrose had the MFR552 allele. So the phenotypic selection and the molecular marker work matches. Conclusions and future research, we found these two markers that possibly link to QTLs for protein and sucrose. We don't know whether this is going to be a pleiotropic effect or different QTL in that chromosomic section. They were environmentally stable and also consistent across genetic backgrounds. And that's what we want when we perform marker tissue selection. It's consistent with previous reports. Other groups have been studying these chromosomic region, other populations in other states under the soybean production areas. They found alleles coming from PI-468-916, from PI-437-088A, and also from a cultivar called Pando. It's a high-protein cultivar, and that is in the R95-1705 pedigree. So we think that that's the source for the high protein in our lines. We validated the QTLs in Arkansas, another important soybean production area. And also, in this study, we reported both protein and sucrose. There are many studies that report only protein, so we wanted to do a genetic study and study both traits at the same time. We're going to perform some marker selection in the future using this QTL. And also, we are going to see the yield potential of these lines. We have four of these lines right now in yield trials in Arkansas in four locations, and we have incorporated two of these lines in our crossing block last year, and we're going to cross them to high yield cultivars. With that, I would like to thank the University of Arkansas, the soybean breeding group at the University of Arkansas, the funding agencies, and now, of course, the experimental station personnel that help us with all this work. With that, I will take any questions that you may have. It's hard. It's hard to get it. That's what we are trying to evaluate that right now with those lines. So far, the yield data that we have for those lines for this year, there are some probably 85% of the commercial check. That's why we want to retest that and maybe in the future incorporate it and cross it to a high yield line. Yeah, it's not an easy task when you want to select for that particular trait and at the same time increase yield. And the same thing for protein, that it's correlated, negatively correlated with yield.
We'll go to the proctor.
The question is if I'm planning to switch to SNP markers. Right now, it's part of our future research. I wouldn't say it's part of next year, but maybe in a couple of years, we'd like to collaborate with the people that are working on similar research and move to SNP markers, yes. Yeah. It would be an excellent complement to this research. Yes, it is the same chromosome region. Yeah, they even, Dr. Panelin is asking about my references there, and he wants to know whether the chromosome region I'm referring to is the same that it's been studied by Dr. Deers, University of Illinois. Yes, it is, and they even have found significance for the very same markers that I've been using in this population, yes.
All right, one last question right here.
It is, yes, exactly. I should have maybe put it there, but it's glycine soja, yes.